I know now more about a subject I don't really care about.
That is what this podcast is all about, Megan. Like, that's basically the tagline of the show.
Yep.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club. Book
club! For masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
Is it actually episode 178?
Yes.
Okay, just checking, because the second part wasn't updated, so I wasn't sure.
Yes.
Okay.
I got that far.
Okay. It's episode number 178, and that means we are talking about aliens nonfiction.
And UFOs.
And UFOs.
This is not a genre.
No, not really. And also, UFOs don't have to be aliens.
What's the... Okay, never mind. Okay, before we get into the weeds of this, I'm Matthew. I'm a librarian in Fort Collins, Colorado, United States of America, Earth. What's the name for our solar system? Does it have one? Or do you just go Milky Way after that point? Anyway.
My name's Anna. I'm also a librarian in the same...
Galactic quadrant.
Yeah. In the same solar region and or galactic quadrant as Matthew, which also happens to be on the traditional and ancestral homelands of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and Ute nations and peoples.
My name is Jam. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Megan. I live and work on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is also known as the National Capital Region of Canada.
So, yeah, aliens and UFOs. It's on our genre list. It's nonfiction. Is this a genre? Although, are we just back to what is a nonfiction genre? It's a topic?
It's a topic. It's several topics is really the problem with it, I think.
Oh, also, what was the other thing? The other thing that I was arguing with myself over. UFOs. What's the other term for them now? We're not supposed to call them UFOs anymore because sometimes they're underwater.
Let me do a quick UFO Google. Unexplained anomalous phenomenon.
Yeah, that's it.
UAPs.
Yeah, definitely. UAPs. That's going to be the thing. Right. Announcements.
Oh, announcements. Sure. So there's a book list for this episode, as there have been for all of our episodes in the last few years, of titles in the genre that we're discussing. So in this case, it is aliens nonfiction. Titles written by BIPOC authors, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color authors. I will say for the aliens list, I'm still working on it as we record, and it's going to include some sort of related topics. It's not going to be... aliens all the way down. There's going to be some books in there about related anomalous phenomena, let's say, or just like, you know, science that's still sort of in a speculative state, time travel, wormholes, that kind of thing.
So I guess this leads me to my first question, which is that are aliens and anomalous things, is this a white person thing?
I think there is certainly a culture, like I found when I was, searching, and I guess this is we're leaking into search strategy a little bit. There is a subgenre of this genre, if we would call it that, of specifically alien abduction stories or alien encounter stories. And I feel like that is a culturally, like, American, rural, and therefore, like, overwhelmingly white phenomenon.
I learned that the first most well-known abduction story was an interracial couple in the United States, a white woman and a black man.
Betty and Barney Hill.
Yeah, Betty and Barney. And I didn't know this. I was just talking about the fact I had to read this genre at work. And one of the people who works in the place that I work was like, oh, yeah, Betty and Barney. And I was like, I don't know.
Wait. Isn't that the name of the Flintstones characters? Betty and Barney Rubble? Like, I think that's actually too much.
No, I don't think you're right. I think the Flintstones predate this alien abduction because this happened in the mid 60s.
Oh.
Yeah, the Flintstones premiered in 1960. Betty and Barney Hill were abducted in 1961, allegedly. What was your point, Megan?
And there was an earlier abduction story, that was a Spanish speaking person, so was not available to the English speaking world before then. So, like, the argument that the alien stories and the alien abduction tropes sort of like are catching, there is some history, I guess, of not white people experiencing alien effects, unidentified anomalous phenomena. Oh my God. How do we even talk about this? But I feel like a lot of the literature out there is probably a lot of white people. I don't know. Like, this is one of those subgenre things where I'm like, I know nothing. I have read one book in which someone claims that all of the magnificent prehistoric or ancient architecture that exists in the world, like the pyramids and everything, is clearly aliens, which I've also heard is pretty much a fairly racist interpretation of the world history as we know it. So there's some stuff there.
People with cultures different than ours couldn't have achieved things. No way.
Exactly. We don't understand. Must be aliens.
Yeah. I feel like looking at this genre, there is a lot of like conspiracy theory adjacent, mostly like abduction or like alien cover-up literature, which I did not choose to read. And then what I gravitated towards more and tried to check out where I could was books that are more speculative, more like based on what we know about what, you know, the conditions that support life and what we know about space so far. And more like if aliens existed, where might they exist? What might they be like? More what if than the truth is out there.
Okay, so I have found a list on Wikipedia of notable abduction claims, which include a claim from Brazil and a claim from China. So it's not just the USA. So it is at least somewhat international in scope.
I mean, but that's not surprising in multiple.
We have three or four cases of non-white people being allegedly abducted or having reporting some kind of alien abduction. I don't know that we have the data. Yeah, I think our data pool is too small to draw any conclusions based on what we've got.
I think what we can do is note that we noted that there is possibly a tendency towards this being a particular cultural phenomenon that is located especially in white America. Mm-hmm. But that does not mean, I mean, look, white America has had a massive influence globally for a long time now, and therefore is going to export some of its mythology around the world in multiple different ways. Now, like, the meaning of all this and our data pool, who knows, because we are not the experts.
I will say, looking into making the book list, the Authors of Color book list for this episode, that the sort of two things, the like conspiracy theory adjacent one and the more like speculative, like, you know, here's what we know about the science so far and skeptical, but like open to it stuff. Medi International, for example, which is like a nonprofit organization that attempts to communicate with extraterrestrial civilizations, but I think is generally well, you know, has a better reputation than the more conspiracy theory adjacent stuff. They're like staff of volunteers, pretty diverse, as far as I can tell. Folks who are selling books about conspiracy theories, not very diverse. That's the data pool that I have.
So you're saying there's a gap in the market?
Yes.
Well, that's certainly not a gap in the conspiracy market in terms of like conspiracy theories are pretty universal. It's just types of conspiracy theories, and the specific ones around alien and UFOs may be from a particular arena, but like conspiracy thinking is just universal.
So we have a structure to this show, and what we've done, Matthew, is abandoned it at like step one of.
Oh, I don't think I even got to step
one. Matthew didn't even get to step one. He didn't even try. He just went straight into rant, into like off topic, different issue.
What's even better is I said I would wait 3 or 4 minutes before interrupting us, and I did not do that. So, yeah, background. I read a lot of these books when I was younger, like a lot of this stuff. I loved reading about aliens and scaring myself. And honestly, I continue to read like weird stuff online sometimes, like usually at like 2 a.m. when it's dark out, and then I like have to make sure all the windows are locked before I go to bed, because I am easily influenced by things sometimes. Yeah, I loved reading them, and now I think they're all just owls. Every single alien encounter is just an owl. Baby owls. Owls on tree stumps. It's all just owls.
It's owls all the way down.
Yeah, 100%.
I can't remember reading anything in this genre. There was a movie theater near where I grew up that I went to a few times in high school that like showed like regular movies sometimes that you had to pay to go see. But like during the daytime, during like the matinee hours, was just playing free movies all the time, and they were all like weird conspiracy theory documentaries. And so I peeped in on a few of those. But I don't know if they were, I guess, is the lizard people conspiracy extraterrestrial, or those like?
Yeah, that's extraterrestrial.
I didn't watch enough of the documentary, I guess. But
if you do believe that there are actually aliens, that it's not a racist thing.
Right. Yeah. Oh boy, we are like not very far in this episode, and it's getting choppy. What's everybody else's background?
I read the one book that was like clearly all the fancy things that people did in the past was because aliens, and also let me talk about various extracts from mythology that includes flying things that could potentially also be aliens.
Did you read Chariot of the Gods? Is that the one you're talking about?
That might have been it. I couldn't remember. And it sounded like there was more than one it could have been.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole series. There's a whole motorcycle of... sorry. There's a motorcycle driving past us.
Yeah.
I was trying to imagine a whole motorcycle full of books about
or a whole motorcycle just loaded up with aliens.
So Chariot of the Gods is a book from the 60s that is famous for saying that lots of religions and ancient civilizations were given, like technologies and stuff were given to humans by ancient astronauts, which are aliens. Or maybe time travelers? I don't really know. Maybe both? Time traveling aliens? I'm sure there's like message boards that thoroughly debate whether these experiences are, you know, hyperdimensional beings from a parallel Earth or space aliens or just time travelers?
I don't remember reading anything specifically on this topic, which is not to say I haven't, but it clearly made no impression if I did.
did none of you watch The X-Files?
Like, I mean, on and off a little.
Oh, yeah, I watched The X-Files. I watched a lot of The X-Files, but mostly on like VHS tape. So I watched the same like 7 episodes over and over.
Okay, but like to me, that's like one of the places that I got interested in this stuff was like, I'm like, oh, aliens, conspiracies and everything. So like I read a lot of stuff after watching those things.
I felt like I thought the alien stuff in X-Files was boring. I liked like the mutated humans more.
Yeah, that's so I was going to say that I've especially in the last year or two, I've been reading a lot of literature about just general conspiracy thinking and but not specifically like aliens or UFOs or like any particular type of conspiracy thinking, but I do find myself more drawn to like learning more about the ones who are like flat Earth and like things like that than per se the alien ones. I don't know why that particular, you know, way of thinking about the inexplainable in the world does not draw me, but the aliens don't really draw me as a way of thinking about the unexplainable in the world, but it clearly does for some people quite a lot, so.
How do you feel about owls?
Adorable. They're really quite adorable, honestly. Okay, so have we defined and gone through our experiences? So,
how did we find books?
Matthew took me to the library. That's how I find mine.
I didn't even take you to the library. I just took like a bunch of stuff from the library, and then you read some of those that I'd borrowed already.
Well, but I went with you when you picked them up.
So. I just looked up a bunch of places that like listed like best books about alien stuff. And then I went to those sections in the library, and I thought it was interesting because they were shelved in two different parts of the Dewey Decimal nonfiction section. So some of them were in
001
and some were in 576. And they were two very different approaches to thinking about alien stuff. And honestly, I just looked at that and it was basically like anything from the last decade or so that I just borrowed pretty much all of them. Cause there weren't that many, in the library here, or at least like the one branch of the library we went to. And I'm just like, oh, I'll just take, I don't know, like the ones I'd heard of. And then I think a couple that I hadn't heard of, cause it was like, oh, this is from like 2017 or something. So sure. Like whatever. Yeah. So that's how I did it. But also, like, I'll say also, like, I came into this going, since I think they're all owls, what's a book about aliens that I might actually want to read that isn't about, like, abduction stories or something, or, like, encounters, close encounters of the third kind? And so I decided to read a much more scientific approach to this stuff, and I went looking for books about astrobiology. So the study of life on other planets. And so that's the approach that I took, which is about alien life. It's just not alien life that is on Earth. Does that make sense? Does that different? Yeah.
Whereas from that selection of things that we located at the library, I went to the tact because I've been interested in
conspiracies.
In conspiracy thinking and the communities around that and how people seek each other and create community and different types of validation. I went for something that was more about that aspect of it, which is the people and the communities, and the ways that they are structuring and finding out information about these types of phenomenon. And then a little bit I started, but got very little into a book that is specifically like I wasn't sure I was going to be able to read something that was actually like, here is my conspiracy theory or here is my UFO encounter. Cause I was just like, I don't want to sit on the podcast and actually mock people, right? Like that's not my goal here, and I don't think it's productive
unless they write Amish romance, then I'm totally happy mocking them.
Yes. Okay, so
maybe you're not, but I'm not, at least.
But yeah, but what I do want to do is like, yeah, like I did kind of want to read something from that perspective. And then I was sort of intrigued to realize that one of the books that was in the collection was about the recent Oumuamua, how is it pronounced? I'm not quite sure. Asteroid, I believe it is, that asteroid that went past, that was interstellar, that was not local, that went by like, I don't know, like 8 years or something ago now. I can't remember how long it's been.
Yeah, the big thing in space that wasn't from our part of space.
Yes, exactly. And it spawned a bunch of theories about, is it actually, you know, a device that is like measuring things or something from an alien, you know, an alien communication or alien scientific device of some kind or travel device of some kind, as opposed to just, you know, being a long, narrow rock or something, which is...
Right. So what was the conclusion?
Well, this person's conclusion is that it has something to do with alien
Oh.
life. And but and they're like a researcher, like a, you know, a cosmologist and astrophysicist and whatever, and they're like it work with Harvard and a bunch of other big, you know, like think tanks. But yeah, anyway, so I started looking at those as well, just because I wanted to see what it would be like to read from the perspective of somebody who is trying to suggest proof about an alien / UFO theory. Oumuamua?
There's an apostrophe at the beginning of this word. That's hard to pronounce. We're just reading his Wikipedia page now. Sorry, we've gone quiet.
Matthew with low sleep is a squirrel brain. Is what what's basically. Yes.
I'm sorry. The owls abducted me and took away all the nuts that are inside my head.
There's too few nuts rattling around in there, so he keeps bounding off into the internet to add new nuts.
Well, in my searching, one thing that I encountered, how I looked for books, I mean, mostly just keyword searches. I was finding a lot of the more alien abduction sorts of books, which was not what I wanted to read. And looking at the subject headings, hot tip, if you are trying to find alien books, the word alien is going to bring you alien abduction and human alien encounters. If you want something that is more skeptical or more sort of science oriented, for lack of a better term, extraterrestrial beings is a separate subject heading, and exobiology, which is just a fun word. But yeah, the sort of frustrating standardized subject heading thing of there being two common words for a thing, aliens and extraterrestrials, and them both being used, meaning you only get half the books if you search one or the other.
What do we call this podcast episode now? Maybe I have to put both in the title. It's going to be aliens and extraterrestrials and UFOs and the other thing.
Guess we'd better record my intro then.
And owls.
Were you going to say more about your search strategy, Jim?
I don't think so. I ended up going with a book that, I'll talk a little bit about one of the books I read from searching exobiology. I ended up landing on a book that I read the most of, which I'll get into, was not a lot still. It was like 500 pages. So, was about images of aliens in mass culture, in mass media. So it is more about humans than aliens. So I kind of did a cheat book this month.
I realized that what I really wanted to read was, which I could not find, and I thought this for sure this would exist, was I wanted a book that would assess the feasibility of fictional alien species. I'm like, take like, you know, all the aliens from like Star Wars and Star Trek and, you know, whatever, Independence Day,
Mars Attacks, Alien,
and be like, how feasible is it for this creature to exist, for these entities to exist, and look at it from like a biology-based viewpoint.
Mars Attacks was the scariest movie I had ever seen at the age that I watched it the first time. It messed me up.
Oh.
I started, this is a true fact, which we don't have to include in this part of the episode. You can put it at the end matter if you want. But I started singing in the shower as a kid because that's how they kill the aliens at the end of Mars Attacks, is with like loud yodeling singing. Spoiler alert for Mars Attacks. But that's why I started singing in the shower, because I was scared of it, aliens.
There'll be a clip here, I guess, maybe. Tom Jones singing? Doesn't he kill aliens? No?
No. He is in it. I watched it again as an adult, and it's a pretty funny movie, with a lot of, yeah, weird actors that you don't remember that are in it, including Tom Jones playing himself.
Based on a series of trading cards.
Based on a series of trading cards. I didn't realize.
Yep. That's what it came from originally. Megan, your search strategies?
Yeah. So, kind of a mix of both. So I tried subject headings first. I used UFOs or unexplained, unidentified flying objects, whatever the extended version of that is. I was looking specifically for stuff that related the phenomenon to, I think, religious studies. So I picked up a few that seemed likely and then a few that also talked about Canada's UFO stuff. And then I went to the library. And the first one I went to, there was nothing in the section that I expected UFO stuff to show up in. I was just doing like casual browsing kind of thing. So I went to a different library branch and found a whole bunch more, which included the one of the things I'd forgotten was Quebec has a like a alien cult called the Raelians.
Yeah, the Raelians. Yes,
the Raelians, yep.
And so I found a book that was the Raelian message to the world, I guess. I didn't end up reading it. I ran out of time and patience for the genre in general. But that was my approach. I really wanted to see what was, you know, just hanging around on the shelves because I thought perhaps some of the stuff that I'd already picked out of the subject heading tactic was perhaps a little bit more academic or skeptical or whatever. So I wanted to see if I could get a broader selection of what might be out there. And I think this is where we talk about what we read.
I read the relevant alien chapter of a book about the science behind the end of the world. So.
Oh, interesting. Which end of the world? Was it all the possible ends of the world?
There's like 11.
Okay.
I'll just start. Okay. So I read, like I said, I went with a very like, looking at the hard science actual stuff of the search for life on other planets and stuff like that aspect of aliens, not like intelligent beings that have come and seen us, but like what could exist, where could it exist, and what does that mean? And so I read three, well, I read, the first book I read was Astrobiology, A Very Short Introduction by David C. Catling. Part of the Very Short Introduction series. Was reading The Zoologist's Guide to the Galaxy, What Animals on Earth Reveal About Our Aliens and Ourselves by Eric Kirschenbaum. And then I also read Death from the Skies, The Science Behind the End of the World, also called Death from the Skies, This is the Way the World Ends. I think it has two different subtitles by Philip Platt. So let me tell you, I've read so much about physics and biology this month, which I did not expect, but I've read about how the solar system formed three different times. So Death from the Skies is about all the different ways the world could end, like from an astronomy point of view. So it's about asteroids, solar flares, supernova, black holes, all of this different stuff. And it has a chapter about aliens as well. Which is the most science fictional of all the books I've read, I think, because it is about like, oh, what if aliens come and kill us? But most of the chapters is about how life evolves again, which is what a lot of these books are, which is about, it's mostly about how life came to be, which is like actually kind of a really interesting field of study that I hadn't really considered. And it's like they're looking at, you know, how did life come to be on Earth? What are the building blocks of life? And then talking about evolution. And stuff like that. And also all this stuff about like, oh, like what's in the atmosphere and how is the atmosphere formed and these different things. Like what planets are most likely to have life based on what we know about how life exists and what life needs to survive. And so it's like, can we have life on, you know, Mars? What's the likelihood of that? Can we have life on, Titan, the moon, and, the other moons and stuff around, in our solar system that might have them, the search for exoplanets, you know, planets in other solar systems and how that's done. And then looking at like how and why animals on Earth have evolved in certain ways and what that might mean. Like what sort of conclusions can we like predict about what life from other, planets might look like if it has reached beyond like a bacterial stage, you know, and it's like, would they have legs? Why are legs a good thing to have if you are on land? You know, like what is the likelihood of lighter than air aliens being? Very low, apparently, based on a number of different factors. Like there's a reason there's no flying blue whale creatures. And just all these different things. And it's like, oh, like, will they have language? What does language mean for different animal species? Does that exist? What is intelligence? What does intelligence mean? How do we evaluate intelligence? So honestly, talked about a lot of really interesting scientific stuff, but I did not expect it to be like this hardcore in some ways. And these are the approachable for the general public books. The actual scientific research, I'm sure, is like even more, is probably beyond my ability to easily understand. But it's because like this is not that old of a field. You know, it hasn't been around for it's been around, I think, since like the 90s, kind of in some ways. And it's not very widespread and it's still very much emerging. And they're just like, yeah, we don't really know, is the answer. So it's interesting to read them. The zoologist one is, what are the chapters? Yeah. Movement, communication, intelligence, sociality, information and language, and, artificial intelligence. And so just kind of looking at these different aspects of it. The one thing I thought a lot about when reading, Astrobiology, A Very Short Introduction, is that it's from 2013. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this must be really out of date by this point. Because, you know, like this is not, like, I assume it's out of date, but I'm like, what advances have happened in this field in the last 10 years? So I was curious about that. Maybe I'll even go look them up after this episode. It's a big maybe, really. I want to read, sorry. So this is from the A Very Short Introduction Astrobiology book. What is life? Astrobiology raises the difficult question of how to define life. A common approach is to list life's characteristics, which include reproduction, growth, energy utilization through metabolism, response to the environment, evolutionary adaptation, and the ordered structure of cells and anatomy. Unfortunately, this way of defining life is unsatisfactory for a couple of reasons. Life has a structural order, such as cells, but salt crystals are also ordered. Some of my friends have no children, but they're alive, I think. I really wished for a little bit more of that humor style in this book. It's there a little bit, but I'm like, that's a good line. But it's also kind of like overwhelming to read all of these books in such a short period of time. And I'm kind of like scienced out. I'm not Anna.
Well, that's fair. That's like, you gotta put some other pieces in between.
I did not read any science-y books. But I'll get started on the first of mine anyway. The first thing I read is called Search for the Unknown, Canada's UFO Files and the Rise of Conspiracy Theory by Matthew Hayes. It's a 2022 book. Fairly short, 210 pages. And what it is Matthew Hayes' thesis rewritten for general audience purposes as opposed to academic purposes. But it's still quite academic, I guess, in some senses. It's more of a history text than science or psychology or some of the other things that I read. It relies quite heavily on Library and Archives Canada's archival collection, because what it does is it looks at the different departments within the government of Canada, how they were looking at the UFO reports that they were getting, how they interacted with the UFOologists or the people who were interested in the unexplained phenomenon and trying to get more information. He talks a bit about how in the United States, they ended up with access to information legislation late 60s, I think. And in Canada, that didn't happen until the mid 80s, like 1984, I think. So there was a lot of tension between the people. The public servants who are getting these letters would be like, why do you need that information? We looked at it and there was nothing interesting about it, right? It was either unexplained or not unexplained, but like natural phenomena, or it would definitely wasn't the Soviets. So like, why should you worry? We don't need to show it to you.
Okay. Being told that makes me think it's the Soviets though. It's like definitely not the Soviets.
And so part of what the book does is talk about, you know, the culture of government when they're not talking to each other between one department and the other. And so citizens would sort of assume that they would get a consistent answer across the departments, because it might have been the Ministry of Transport they were asking, it might have been Department of Defense, it might have been Natural Resources Canada. And because these different institutions didn't talk to each other, they might get different answers from each one of the institutions. It's kind of interesting for me. I live in a government town, and this feels true to me as a possible explanation for how the state was interacting with its citizenship. But it's not necessarily like a thrilling story, as it were, to talk about government process and bureaucracy and how people were just less likely to take the government's word for whatever they decided that their citizens should get as an answer. Hayes doesn't take a stand on the reality of the, you know, whether or not it's aliens or not, but he does acknowledge that in general, some of the ways that the citizens were interacting with the state might have felt fairly off-putting to the public servants whose job it was to answer their questions or avoid answering their questions if they thought it wasn't a good use of their time.
One thing you just said there at the very beginning, that this was somebody's like thesis, reminded me, I actually wrote a paper for an astronomy course about the search for alien life. And I got a bad mark on it because I wrote about like Martian canals and that sort of search for like alien life. And the prof wanted like an actual science paper. And I was like, let me tell you about these canals from the 19th century. Shrug emoji. I agree.
That sounds actually like a very, that age of life sort of thing.
Look, I was I got a history degree.
Yeah.
You know, like that was the sort of essay I was used to writing.
Yeah. And also just like the things that would interest and draw you. Yeah.
I can talk about my books next. I'll talk about the more essentially art history book that I read some of. But first, I did want to mention one that I found from our list of books by BIPOC authors. Aliens. I guess I don't know if this is the whole... Oh, the cover says, "Join the scientists searching space for extraterrestrial life." Don't know if that's actually part of the title or not, or just the tagline. And it's by Joalda Maranci and Amy Grimes. It is a children's nonfiction book, but it looked shiny and new. And one of the co-authors is an author of color. And so I was putting it on our list since, as I said, it was hard to find titles for this list. And it's just a beautiful book, like a great kids nonfiction that talks about, goes through the planets of our solar system and why they would or would not be capable of supporting life. And then like into the science of like exoplanets and how do we find exoplanets and like the technology that we're using to study space and all of that good stuff. And it is by from a publisher, a new publisher of kids nonfiction called Neon Squid Books. And I ended up going to their website and taking a look. And yeah, they just make really beautiful nonfiction books for kids on various subjects. And their like pool of authors seems to be pretty diverse. So a plug for Neon Squid Books. The art history book that I read a few chapters-ish of... I read maybe like 15% of this book, but it is over 500 pages, so I don't feel too bad about reading that amount. Picturing Extraterrestrials, Alien Images in Modern Mass Culture by John F. Moffat, who is a professor of art history, and he certainly writes like one.
Oh, is this the Capitalism is Bad book?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if his conclusion necessarily is capitalism is bad. I mean, that's my conclusion. but he essentially is investigating the history of images of aliens in our culture from like a, you know, sort of from an art history perspective. Yes, frequently makes reference to the fact that people make money off of you know, promoting a belief in aliens, and is very critical of that. I also looked into the publisher of this one, which was Prometheus Books. This is something I want to make a habit of doing, is looking up the publisher when it's not like one of the major, is it major six now? Are we down to like four? Like how many?
I believe one of the mergers got canceled.
But Prometheus Books is a publisher specifically of skeptical fiction or skeptical nonfiction. So one of their other books was a magician who was wrote a well-read book disproving various like ESP and psychic and like the spoon bending phenomenon. Yes, so specifically a publisher that is skeptical and in sort of an aggressive way, that they are pretty dismissive of paranormal phenomena. And certainly John F. Moffat in this book is pretty dismissive of the existence of extraterrestrials and people's encounters with them. And he writes like an art historian. He throws in a lot of like Latin phrases and various foreign language phrases without translating them, which is kind of fine, but just like seems needless. Both phrases things in this very sort of academic, like complicated way, but also will sometimes just like go off on rants and like clearly wrote this book with a particular point of view is very like cheeky and sarcastic in some of it. And I think for some folks, like that mix of like highly academic language plus like this sort of sarcastic sense of humor would be their bread and butter, but I struggled with it. In particular, I read the chapter on Betty and Barney Hill, which was pretty interesting. That is a incident that I knew about. There's a character in my D&D campaign, which is my D&D campaign is based on a fictional New England, and there's a character named Betty Hill. Very, very loosely based on Betty Hill. So it was interesting to read more about them. But in the end of that chapter, he talks about a few other abductions and starts saying like, why would aliens abduct these nobodies? Why wouldn't they abduct like important people? And I was like, because they wouldn't want to start like an intergalactic like war or something. And I was like, why are you making me defend alien abductions? Like, what? You're doing a bad job if I came to the text agreeing with you and now I'm like, well, your argument's bad. Yes, there was some stuff in the early chapters about like why aliens look the way that they do, being related to like new age trends and aliens as much of it being like a sort of science topic. He related it to like new age spirituality, which was sort of trending in like the 80s in popular culture in at the same time. And that like the typical alien with the big eyes and the big head is a like idealized human who is like more intelligent and more spiritual and like their physical body is diminished because they like no longer have need to labor and, you know, because their technology is so advanced, et cetera, et cetera. And I don't really know if he gets further into that line of talking about aliens, which I'm more interested in, but I just couldn't like, besides it being like a tome, it being 500 pages, and I just didn't get that far into it, but possibly some interesting stuff in there. It's in between. It's tough. It was tough to get through.
So I'll follow this up, your academic tome, with my academic tome, which was less academic-y ease, but still of a perspective. This was called Intimate Alien, The Hidden Story of the UFO by David J. Halperin. It's a 2020 publication. Halperin is a professor of religious studies.
and was obsessed with UFOs as a teenager in the 60s, mostly to avoid acknowledging that his mother was very ill and dying. So this sidesteps the issue of realness in aliens and alien experiences in order to focus on what he believes that aliens mean for ourselves as the people who experience the aliens or cultures or the like political situation. Psychologically, there's a lot of Jung here and Freud. A number of the things just made me mostly uncomfortable. There's like an image of the alien face from the book Communion, and he spends one section talking about how the eyes of the aliens, if you turn them sideways, they look like vulvas. And I'm like, really? This is your argument? All right, moving on. Let's just keep going.
I was going to ask if this is a book about banging aliens, but like maybe is what I'm getting from you.
I mean, that's a number of the abduction stories include, you know, like sexual violations. And then they talk about the satanic panic and whether or not this is repressed other things and lots of hypnotism and stuff like that. So it's very focused on what the UFO observation or the alien experience really meant for the people who were undergoing it. Like, even if the phenomenon that was underlying it was something else, like it was some strange lights or some owls or an airplane or whatever, he likes to go into what the anxieties or the background was of the person to try and that was the most interesting part for him for why they were having alien experiences. So any inconsistency of the witness testimony or other natural explanations, that was beside the point. And it was mostly our complexes around, you know, sex, death, historical trauma, stuff like that. There is a tiny bit of religious stuff, which was actually what I was looking for. They talk a little bit about Ezekiel and the thing with the four-faced beings and the flying chariot and whatever, but... Oh, and some Jewish mystics, but it was mostly about the psychology of the people undergoing this. This was a slog for me. I'm sure you can tell. But it was interesting in the context of the other two books that I read, how, like, someone's perspective on the alien phenomenon, what part of it they wanted to talk about was really what the base of the book ended up being about.
So I also read one that was more about what they mean to us than proving whether they are or aren't. The book I read is called They Are Already Here, UFO Culture and Why We See Saucers by Sarah Scholes. And she is a journalist, writes with Wired and Popular Science and a variety of other, she has written with Vice and The Verge and all sorts of places. So I will say the writing style certainly has a little bit of that influence of journalists who came up within the Roman era, heavily influenced by BuzzFeed, like news, right? So it's a little, I mean, it's quick to read. As compared to, say, a scholarly one. Because when I started reading that the other one that was from the researcher who believed that Oumuamua was a proof of aliens, that's from somebody who comes up from the scientific tradition. And although it's, like, written to be relatively readable by the popular audience, you could still very much feel that this comes from somebody from the academic tradition. In the writing style, this very much feels like it comes from somebody from the journalism, from the current internet age of the journalism style of writing, right? Which annoyed me a lot at the beginning, but I just eventually tuned it out and it didn't bother me. And it is very readable, like easy and fast to read. So it is very much about UFO culture, but it takes it from a kind of focuses around a particular story slash recent-ish like cultural change and how the government is talking about UFOs. It's just a little too old to capture some of the most recent stuff that has been like from the US government's side of what they're releasing on things. But it talks a bit about the AATIP, which I cannot find the like full name of at the moment. It's in this book. Matthew could look it up. The Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, which is from the like mid-2000s to the early 2010s, looks like. And some of the people involved with that, particularly the people who were not governmental, but actually are sort of like people who kind of sort of bought their way into it. And so it does talk a little bit about like the influences of people with lots of money. Like one of the people in here is DeLong from Blink-182. What's his first name?
Tom.
Tom, thank you.
Why do I know that?
Oh, I don't know. It's just like weird cultural bits that just lodge in your brains. I don't know. But anyways, he's a big UFO believer and he's been putting together a whole like has a whole kind of business around it. And then it talks also about other like there's somebody with a fortune that comes out of hotels that's like big into UFOs. So it starts kind of from that perspective of like unpacking cultural narratives, the current state of like how interacts with the government, how moneyed random people in our cultural space are perpetuating some of these and involving themselves in there. But it also is looking at it from the perspective of people who consider themselves researchers. So that's particularly in like any kind of, conspiracy theorizing environment. People will think of themselves as researchers and they just come from the style of research that's very self-driven. And so it talks about different people's attitudes towards that position and their in relation to aliens and UFOs and how skeptical they are, how they consider what research looks like within that space. The author talks a little bit about trying to be, you know, like sympathetic and understanding to these, like, you know, may not be a believer themselves, but they want to understand where this comes from and talks about their own experiences where they're like, well, I will admit that I very quickly understood exactly what this was, but I admit to this moment where it was kind of amazing to see this thing in the sky that looked impossible and then to realize slowly like what it was actually.
An owl.
No, it wasn't. Sorry. In this instance, it was not.
All owls.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Not in this one. And a lot, that's actually common. I've read a number of books from that perspective where like journalists are like, I'm trying to be sympathetic and I often don't actually find them terribly sympathetic towards their, like, and for a lot of this, I think that there, it takes a very journalist perspective of just sort of like presenting things, but they're still just a little like on the skepticism side. But towards the very end, I think they make some good points, about the humanity of this experience of trying to understand our world and trying to put our lives and the meaning of our lives into perspective and just the need to have a means to do that. And you do it through religion, you do it through belief in aliens, you do it through a whole wide variety of different means and modes. And we don't necessarily have one connected, consistent mean and mode at the moment culturally. And so people are, you know, finding the one that works for them, amongst a number of other things that she points out. So it was actually relatively enjoyable, and it really is a pretty darn fast read. And if you just want to kind of like get into some of like a whole bunch, she talks about a whole bunch of well-known figures in the ufology. That's the terminology for that area of research by people who believe in UFOs or at least are looking into the potential belief in that. And UFOs specifically associated with aliens, I mean, not the actual meaning of UFOs, which is just that it's unidentified, not that it is aliens. But so if you're looking just into like understanding some of the major players and kind of sort of the state of where that's at in the world today and how it's influencing people and different movements at the moment, it's a nice, easy, fast, and interesting read and presentation of that. So I actually enjoyed it a fair amount, given that I was not really going into this thinking super excited. But I think taking the perspective of sort of the like understanding why we think this way, it might help a little that I've been doing reading in this area. So I've been thinking a fair amount about like what is productive to people about being a conspiracy thinker and what is non-productive and that kind of thing. And so I was like already primed to come into this from a understanding sort of method. But yeah, so that's one I read. I enjoyed it.
Can I say a non sequitur?
Yes. I mean, can we stop you?
Hey, Matthew. Yeah. Could we stop you?
Yeah.
So I feel I'm about like 70% of the way to creating a good like tongue twister that a small child can say creepily in a movie about space aliens. So it's she sees saucers in the starry skies. There needs to be a better adjective in there. But yeah, she sees saucers in the blank blank in the something skies. Anyway, yeah, fill in your own.
The silent skies.
Yeah, in the I don't know, silent skies.
It's creepier.
It is creepier.
It is, definitely. Yeah, yeah. So
that was definitely a non sequitur. I did not anticipate.
Look, you said the word saucer in my mind.
Yeah, it's sea saucers is on the cover of the book. It's part of the title.
Sea saucers.
I got it. I can't believe your brain held on to that through my entire description of the book.
Might not have been listening to you.
It was busy in your brain the whole time coming up with. It's fun. It's funny.
And then Jam creates a better one like immediately. So like clearly I could have spent my time listening to you instead. Are there more books we have to talk about?
Just one. My last book is called Mirage Men, An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs by Mark Pinkington, who is a British writer. This was published in 2010, so it's a little older, but I thought it was interesting because its particular tact is the government is encouraging UFO belief to cover up what they're doing in other places as a misinformation, misdirection tactic to both hide whatever their super secret military stuff is and mislead potential espionage. So this was written before the documentary of the same name came out. I haven't seen. I don't know what it's about, but they go down to a small town that is not very near Las Vegas for a week-long UFO conference to talk with certain individuals within the UFO community. So it's this weird sort of mix of like desert and people being very furtive and not willing to talk, and then maybe they talk, and then maybe everything they're talking about is just like nonsense that they made up in order to make friends or something like that. This felt a lot like the piece of investigative journalism that I read about the disappearance of the airplane, the Malaysian airplane, in which there is a whole lot of facts and things and theories thrown at you, and at the end I'm like, so maybe it's misdirection. I don't know why I'm not sure I care about all these people that I just learned about, but there you go. It was also interesting because that you got different perspectives on the same alien abduction UFO experiences that you'd heard in the other book that I read, only they would take completely different aspects of it to highlight and talk about. And since I don't have a strong background in all of the past UFO stuff, you know, it just sort of strengthens, oh yeah, the first airplane guy who saw something in 1946, and then this other stuff, and then these two people, and then, I mean, it's still America-centric, or US-centric, but I know now more about a subject I don't really care about.
That is what this podcast is all about, Megan. Like, that's basically the tagline of the show.
Yep.
I definitely saw some people suggesting that one online. So that's one that people have enjoyed and recommended to some extent. Speaking of recommendations and things, what are the appeal factors of these books? I think something you just said, Megan, made me think about how for some people, reading about the stuff and thinking about the stuff and talking about the stuff is because of a sense of community that exists. And those can form around so many things. And even if you go back to what you mentioned earlier with the Raelians, like the cult stuff is also kind of tied into this. And it's just like people not wanting to be alone in whatever definition alone means, either personally or galactically, can kind of drive some of these things.
And access to special knowledge, too. Like, if you're into the research, there's a potential that you could find out something amazing about the world that people don't know about or that it has been hidden, if you're into the conspiracy side of it.
Yeah, you could see the idea that, like, I know something that you don't as well can also be an appeal to people for wanting to know about this stuff.
Yeah, and like, with any kind of sort of conspiracy piece, there's a certain amount of like, I don't understand the world. And then you move from I don't understand the world to additionally, I feel like some people do have more knowledge than me and they're intentionally hiding it for their own gain. And then you get into this community aspect of like, well, other people think the same thing as me, that there are people hiding information for their own gain. And I want to be part of pulling that apart to make it apparent, to make it open into the world. But you can also go from the other side of it of I want to understand people who think that way. So you could be like me, you know, who's like I'm interested in the cultures around this and the people who are exploring this type of way of understanding their worlds or understanding how information moves through their worlds through secrets and conspiracies and things like that. And so that could also be a reason why you're approaching it.
Mm-hmm. And since we've had like 70 years basically of aliens being part of popular culture and different experience, then there's this whole other realm of study in which you could just look at how UFOs, aliens, extraterrestrials, like what do they say about us? What do they say about our culture, how we deal with things, about our hopes, our fears, our like everything. It's just another lens through we can explore things.
There's also a lot of people who have had experiences where they don't know what it was. So, like, this is not an uncommon thing. There's a huge number of people who will say, I saw some sort of unidentified object, but the proportion of those who believe it was aliens is fairly small. It's just that, like, there are a lot of people who have this experience. And so when you, like, have a small proportion of a lot of people, you still have quite a few people if they think it's aliens, right?
Yeah, I think probably similar to like ghost hunting and other realms of like paranormal research is there's a segment of people who have some experiences that they're like, I actually know what it is. And now I'm going to do the science to prove that that's what it is, which is famously how science works.
Totally. Exactly. Yeah, and there's a lot of people, too, that just, you know, like, the idea of explaining your world through science is sort of infuriating. It's like my world is more of an emotional and felt landscape and experienced landscape and, like, exploring it through this, like, yeah.
Matthew's laughing, and I can tell you exactly why. Because you said felt landscape, and he's thinking of, like, an all-felt, like, sort of puppet world.
Yes.
Am I correct?
No comment. So, would we read this genre again?
You know, you have recorded a podcast for a long time with other people when you can pick up on exactly.
I know what it was. Yep, I know what triggered that. I have one fun fact, non sequitur, that I want to share from the book I read, which is that in Barney Hill's drawing, it includes Barney Hill's drawing of of the extraterrestrial he supposedly encountered, which he produced under hypnosis. And his story also changed several times while under hypnosis. And yeah, there's a bunch of context to it. But in his first drawing, which is very central to this art historian's narrative, because it is so closely hewed to what we, you know, what became the stereotypical image of aliens, where the archetype sort of came from. But what didn't get continued in the archetype is that in Barney Hill's original drawing, the alien, like big head, big eyes, is also wearing like a jaunty hat and a scarf. And I think it's too bad that we lost that aspect of aliens.
I agree. That is delightful.
I love the idea that aliens, which so often are portrayed as like completely naked, only they wear hats.
Yeah, they wear only hats and scarves.
And that's hats honestly, and maybe that's the real reason that they've stopped coming to Earth, is that they're like, you used to wear hats and we came and visited you then, and now you're not wearing hats. You're only wearing baseball caps. This is unacceptable. Better hats. Yeah. That's the real solution.
Aliens are true gentlemen, is what you're saying.
Gentle beings.
Yeah, sure.
It looks jaunty to me. It looks like a jaunty cap. I don't know if that's how. I feel like there was some language in some of their stories about it being like a military style hat, but I like to think of all aliens wearing jaunty hats and scarves. You know, they've got those big heads. They got to keep them. They don't have any hair. They got to keep them warm somehow.
Yeah, it's a lot of heat loss.
Yeah. Are we ready to do the outro?
Wait, we have to do that question.
Oh, he is wearing a hat.
Matthew, yeah.
Yeah, would we read this genre again? I'm going to finish the books that I haven't finished because I do think they're interesting. But I don't think I'll be coming back to this anytime soon.
I would read the sort of kids nonfiction levels. The one book I took out, I feel like that's the amount of information that I need about this.
With lots of nice pictures.
With lots of great illustrations, yeah.
Yeah, I think a book about like exobiology would be cool, but not the stuff that I did read. It's not what I'm interested in.
I agree. I think an exobiology book might draw me at some point or another. I also suspect I will continue to read around the landscape of like just understanding the cultures of people and the thinking of various types of conspiratorial thinking from different angles, and it might come up in there, but it's not like, again, I'm drawn to different ones. The alien one is not the primary thing I'm drawn to.
Outro!
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode and consider giving us a positive rating and or review. And if you've already done that, thanks for doing that.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is a numeral. The numeral is the numeral. You can go to our website at bookclubform.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclubform, and find us on Instagram at bookclubform. Our email address is bookclubform@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to the things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book lists of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or a title for us to read, or request a recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out. No promises on reading your suggestion, but we will give you a recommendation if you ask for one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, July 18th for our annual One Book, One Podcast Pitch episode.
Then on Tuesday, August 1st, we'll be discussing the genre of pulp fiction. Not the movie, the fiction genre of pulp. A plus, everybody. High fives all around. Have a good summer, it says in your report card.
It did look extra fluffy.
So what seems to be the problem?
Well, Doctor, I see these strange creatures every time I say the word, phenomena.
Phenomenon.
Phenomenon.
It's the strangest thing I've ever seen. Do you mind if I try it?
Sure.
Phenomenon.
Wow, that was worth $100.